It's nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. Broadcasting from Kodiak, Alaska, high atop Signal Hill under overcast skies, 48 degrees outside. We're looking for a 30% chance of rain today, mainly before 4 p.m. Mostly cloudy skies today with a high near 51, north winds to 15. Could gust as high as 20. For tonight, just a slight chance of rain before 7, then isolated showers between 7 and 10. Mostly cloudy skies overnight with a low of 38. Northwest wind to 10 miles per hour. And the good news, tomorrow, sunny, with a high near 52, northwest to 15, could gust as high as 25. Coming up on the Midday Report, Alaska's North Slope has seen a big spike in coronavirus infections. The city of Bethel's COVID-19 vaccine mandate has seen some workers walk off the job. And Juneau is being held up as an example of how mitigation measures can affect transmission rates of COVID. Those stories after this.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The United States is facing two fast-approaching deadlines. The federal government's about to run out of money. The U.S. is also nearing the brink of a devastating default. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has been sounding the alarm for weeks and did so again today in congressional testimony.
It is imperative that Congress address the debt limit. If not, our current estimate is that Treasury will likely exhaust its extraordinary measures by October 18th. At that point, we expect Treasury would be left with very limited resources that would be depleted quickly.
President Biden met today with Democratic Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, both of whom side with Republicans in opposing the size of the $3.5 trillion spending package. Top Pentagon officials are stating publicly for the first time that they personally believed it would be a mistake to withdraw all American troops from Afghanistan. NPR's Barbara Sprunt reports the leaders face rigorous questions during a Senate Armed Services hearing.
When pressed by lawmakers as to what they specifically recommended to President Biden ahead of the withdrawal, top Pentagon leaders said they would not discuss their personal conversations with the president. Instead, they offered their personal opinions from ahead of the withdrawal. General Kenneth McKenzie testified that he believed at the time the U.S. should maintain 2,500 troops in Afghanistan.
I also have a view that the withdrawal of those forces would lead inevitably to the collapse of the Afghan military forces and eventually the Afghan government.
This is at odds with comments Biden made during an interview in August, though the White House says Biden made clear in the interview that advisors were split over the issue. Barbara Sprunt, NPR News.
At the hearing, General Mark Milley strongly denied claims published in a new book that he held secret calls with China to address Beijing's worries that then-President Donald Trump might start a war. Milley says two calls he made were aimed at diffusing tension. Survivors and family members of a shooting that killed five employees at the Capital Gazette newspaper in Annapolis, Maryland, expressed relief and sadness after a judge gave the convicted assailant a maximum sentence. For member station WAMU, here's Dominique Maria Benessi.
Jared Ramos has been sentenced to more than 300 years in prison, given six life sentences without the possibility of parole, and additional time for the attempted murder of the surviving victims. Celine Sanfelice, one of the survivors, told the judge the shooter couldn't kill the truth.
It felt really good to be able to look the judge in the eye and also to be able to look the shooter in the eye. It meant a lot to me to be able to tell him to his face that he failed.
The sentence comes after a 12-day trial that concluded with a jury finding that Ramos was sane and criminally responsible for his actions during the shooting 3 years ago. For NPR News, I'm Dominique Maria Benessi in Annapolis.
You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Alaska's North Slope has seen the highest coronavirus infection rates of any region in the state recently. And while the North Slope borough's rate of vaccination for COVID-19 is on par with Anchorage, it's far behind that of other comparable rural areas off the road system. Anchorage Daily News reporter Zachariah Hughes has been writing about COVID on the North Slope. He told Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove some communities there have seen their first infections of the pandemic during the recent Delta variant-driven surge.
This is a region that had gotten by relatively unscathed from previous waves of the pandemic. There were communities on the North Slope that saw no cases last summer or even last winter when the virus was surging in other parts of the state. And all of a sudden, you're having dozens of people in communities of just a few hundred folks that are returning positive tests. And so that's where a lot of the alarm is there's just so many positive tests coming back. And I think, you know, some degree of uncertainty about whether or not another shoe would drop in that.
So another thing that you got into with your story was the rate of vaccination in the North Slope borough. What are they seeing with that?
Well, it's a really low vaccination rate relative not just to the state's overall rate, but most of the hub communities in rural Alaska and a lot of the Western Alaska regions have really high vaccination rates, and they have since the vaccine first came out. A lot of the regional health corporations in, you know, the Bethel area, the Northwest Arctic Borough, the Bering Strait region were really aggressive and frankly really capable about delivering vaccination to a lot of their residents in hubs and in the outlying smaller communities. And that's not the case in Utqiagvik and for the North Slope. And I was really curious about why that was. The North Slope actually has the second lowest vaccination rate in the entire state. It's at about 41%. That's 20, 30, 40 points lower than some of the comparable communities in Western and kind of Arctic Alaska.
Yeah. Well, did any of the folks that you talked to have ideas about why that's the case?
One of the people I spoke with in the North Slope borough's health department said that, you know, this summer the borough sent out teams to basically canvass every single household in the communities on the North Slope to find out, okay, why aren't people getting the vaccine? And what this fellow told me was that, you know, he'd knocked on about 200 doors, he estimated, in some of the outlying communities. And he heard a lot of misinformation. He heard a lot of people's mistrust for the vaccine. They had some conspiratorial assumptions about the vaccine. And so for him, that was, you know, the biggest factor that they were running into. I think it's also important to point out that, you know, if you're living in a place that has not had a single positive case, it can be hard to see the urgency and the imperative. An assembly member from the North Slope Borough who represents Point Lay and Atkasuk told me, you know, we had no cases in town until very recently. And, you know, maybe we let our guard down because now it's spreading out all over the place. And then just historically, the Arctic North Slope region has not always had a great relationship with federal agencies and federal initiatives that have come in purportedly in the name of scientific progress and health.
The city of Bethel's COVID-19 vaccine mandate took effect on Monday. Five city employees are set to be fired for refusing to be vaccinated. Under the new mandate, all city of Bethel employees, contractors, and volunteers must be vaccinated against COVID-19. Since the city announced the mandate 2 weeks ago, nearly half of the previously unvaccinated workers have got the jab. Before the mandate, the city employed 15 unvaccinated workers. That total included 7 unvaccinated police officers, who made up nearly half the police department. Now, every officer but 2 have been vaccinated. Of the 2 unvaccinated officers, 1 has been granted a religious exemption, and the other officer faces being fired. Both unvaccinated officers reside in Wasilla and commute to Bethel on a 2 weeks-on, 2 weeks-off schedule. At least 4 more employees face firing. All are in public works. Alaskans are getting COVID-19 at a faster rate than any other state in the nation. Case rates are nearly double last December's peak. Experts point to Juneau as proof that emergency mandates could slow transmission. KTOO's Claire Strimple reports.
The impacts of the Delta variant became stark in mid-August, and in most parts of the state, case counts just continue on that upward trend. But Juneau's data sticks out. In mid-August, its case counts start to go down.
And that downswing started about 2 weeks after level three mandate of reduced capacity and masking.
Jonathan King is an economist who spends his pandemic days poring over state data. In late July, Juneau brought its mask mandate back. And in early August, it limited capacity at bars and restaurants, among other restrictions. King says what happened next looks like a data confirmation that those mitigation mandates worked.
Is it causing a crashing of viral numbers? No, it's not, but it seems like it's holding it in check at least, and at least slowing the growth rate.
To be clear, Juneau's cases are going up right now. Juneau has been hit harder and seen more cases and more hospitalizations in the last month than ever before in the pandemic. But compared to the rest of the state on certain metrics, the capital city is doing okay.
What we see in Juneau is we see about a 4% positivity rate, which is much, much better than, say, Anchorage's 9% positivity rate and the positivity rate for testing in other boroughs.
Positivity rate is the percentage of tests that come back positive. The higher the rate, the more likely it is that you'll encounter someone who's infected. Juneau's rate may be lower than Anchorage's, but it's still really high. And Jared Kosin, the chief executive of the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association, says that just because some of Juneau's numbers are lower doesn't mean they're healthy.
And those numbers are valid, and they're good indicators of things, but they do not tell you the full story on the ground.
Kosin says that even though the state's data dashboard has Juneau's hospital capacity in the green, Bartlett Regional Hospital is really full. Last week, there were no open beds. And 18 months into the pandemic, the impact on staff is significant.
These people are exhausted, and the facility is stressed. When you put that number of patients on them, it's not something that's just a simple, manageable load.
State epidemiologists say the two major factors that decrease transmission rates are vaccines and mitigation, things like masks, social distancing. A state study published in January showed that emergency orders, including a mask mandate, slowed the pandemic in Anchorage last summer. More than 80% of Juneau's eligible population is fully vaccinated. And on a call with statewide health providers and reporters this month, Juneau-based public health nurse Sarah Hargrave said there's a reason the mask mandate is working in Juneau.
People follow it. You just don't see people out in the stores without masks. People are pretty good about social distancing. Bars and restaurants are at a lower capacity based on city ordinances.
Jonathan King, the economist, says the Juneau numbers are an indicator of how things could be going a little bit better everywhere else in the state.
You know, there's a lot of people in the state that are working very hard, but the lack of public health mitigation measures is hurting the state right now, and it's costing lives. And someday, some very smart person will sit down and actually calculate the number of additional hospitalizations and deaths and cost that the state is incurring because it refuses to pursue even the most basic public health measures.
He says it just doesn't add up. In Juneau, I'm Claire Strimple.
A Delta Junction-based organization has completed the first phase of work on a new trail that offers stunning views of the eastern Alaska Range as it winds through a stretch of old-growth boreal forest. The Delta Junction Trails Association celebrated the opening of the Riverwalk Park with a feature that lets kids read while they're getting some exercise. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
About 100 people showed up on a recent sunny Saturday for the official opening of Riverwalk Park Trail, including families that came to enjoy a leisurely hike while reading a story about elementary school students who love to go out and play, even when it's nippy outside.
It's fun to see the kids that are here and that are finishing now and looking like they enjoyed themselves, so it's really fun.
Delta Community Library Director Tiki Levinson was talking about a family that had just come back from the story walk that Levinson and a few others had set up along the Riverwalk Trail. The story walk features 18 signboards placed along the 1.6-mile trail that show each page of a book titled Recess at 20 Below. It's a story written by local author Cindy Lou Alaud about kids who brave the cold to get out on the playground.
And then there's activities, which Cindy helped me develop, that go along with the story. So it's physical activity and getting outside and literacy all together.
A-Laud, another Trails Association member, said she was honored that Levinson chose her book to inaugurate the story walk.
It was her idea, and she selected my book as the first.
And it was a great idea, based on what families were telling Levinson after taking the story walk.
Did you guys have fun?
Yeah.
What, did you do some of the activities?
Ryan?
All of them.
All of them or not all of them?
All of them.
All of them. Oh, cool. Awesome. I'm so happy that you guys came.
We are so excited that this is happening.
Delta Trails Association President Mindy Eggleston says setting up the Story Walk was a great way to attract busy families to the Riverwalk Park Trail's grand opening.
These people maybe wouldn't come without a draw like this. So it's exciting to see an event happen like this. It would draw all of these unique trail users.
Eggleston says the Trails Association is planning to develop many other attractions during the next phase of the Riverwalk Park project.
We are developing a park, and this is the first phase, which is the heart of the park. And then we're going to build around that.
Phase one included some of the most challenging work, like cleaning up the area, which was used as a shooting range set up next to an old dump site the city closed in the 1980s. The reclamation of the land has helped attract funding for the project, including a $75,000 National Park Service grant, matched by a total of $10,000 from Golden Valley Electric Association, the City of Delta, and local donors. Eggleston says more funding will be needed for the project's next phase.
If we can come up with $100,000, we should be able to do quite a bit of the parking, the river viewing area, and then the bike features and single track.
Eggleston says the Trails Association also plans to provide access to the parking lot for ATVs, but the Riverwalk Trail itself won't be open to motorized vehicles. She says they'll try to keep the trail groomed over the winter for cross-country skiers who, like the kids in the book, just want to get out and play, even if it's nippy outside. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
More than 15 years ago, two people asked Alaska courts to grant them restraining orders against a man who's now running for Juneau's school board. Tom Bizard also had a run-in with the city after he fell behind on his sales taxes and ended up owing thousands of dollars. KTOO's Rasha McChesney has this story.
Tom Bizard is one of two candidates for Juneau's school board who has been accused of harassing people in this community. But in his case, neither of those restraining orders were granted. Both happened during his time working for Wright Services, the property management company. The first was a coworker named Robert Nix, who asked for a protective order in 2004 after he was fired. In court documents, Nix says that he had reported Bizard to the borough for allegedly leaving junk vehicles on public property. He says Bizard was retaliating against him. And he said he feared physical injury or death because Bizard carried his gun around with him. A judge dissolved the initial protective order and didn't grant a long-term one. Bizard says Nix was fired and angry about it. He also says he's not a criminal.
I have a firearms enthusiast. I own guns. I have a concealed carry permit. If I was a criminal, I would not have a concealed carry permit.
Nix lives outside of Alaska now. He says he doesn't want to talk about the incident, but he also sticks by his original story. In the other protective order request, a woman who lived in one of the properties Bizard was managing said he was spying on her and making lewd comments while her husband was away at work. A judge didn't grant that order either. Bizard says the woman and her partner were manufacturing drugs in the park.
An opportunity came up for us to evict them when they failed to pay their rent 1 month, and we jumped on that.
He says she filed for that protection order after getting the eviction order. That woman also appears to have left the community. She didn't respond to any messages seeking more information about the incident. Bizard points out that he's been on both sides of the protective order process. In a more recent case, he was granted an order against a man who threatened his family with violence.
What I would like people to know is that, number one, I'm glad that the law is in place, but the problem, there's two problems. One is that the law does not require enough proof to issue even the temporary restraining order.
He also thinks that if you're granted a restraining order, it should last longer. At another time, Bizard fell behind on sales taxes that his pest control company owed to the city. He ended up owing the city nearly $12,500 that he and his wife paid off after setting up a payment plan. Now, he says they pay their taxes every 30 days.
We're never late. My wife has got it all handled and under control. That's why she runs the business, because she's so much better at the administrative side than I am.
CBJ records show that judgment was paid off in 2017. Bizard says he was frustrated by this situation because he and his wife thought the agreement was with the city and wouldn't end up in court unless they fell behind on their payments. But that turned out not to be the case.
If you're going to be on the school board, you're going to be handling the district's budget. So what did you learn from that situation?
Keep your paperwork current. Don't let things fall behind, fall by the wayside. Make the time necessary to get it done in a timely manner. Always.
Bizard and seven other people, including two write-in candidates, are in the running for three open school board seats. In this vote-by-mail election, voting is happening now, but for people who prefer to vote in person, Election Day is October 5th. In Juneau, I'm Rasha McChesney.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Global wild salmon tallies and ongoing U.S. trade hits. More after this.
Grundin's Deck Boss 15-inch boots feature a protective toe cap, uppers that won't crack, and compression-molded rubber outsoles for better traction on wet decks. Made in USA.
Alaska's salmon catch has topped 226 million. That's 36 million more fish than the preseason projection. That production is dwarfed by Alaska's biggest competitor, Russia, whose wild salmon catch of nearly 386 million fish is 13% more than expected. Trade data show that the U.S. so far this year has purchased nearly 3 million pounds of salmon from Russia, valued at almost $11 million. Nearly half of the volume and value was from sockeye salmon. Global market watcher TradeX predicts the combined 2021 wild salmon totals from Russia, the U.S., Japan, Canada, and South Korea will top 2 billion pounds compared to 1.3 billion pounds last year. But all that salmon will go into a tight market, says spokesperson Rochelle Ryerson.
Sockeye continues to remain short. We do not expect much more sockeye to come out for the remainder of the year. And when the odd offer does appear, expect it to be very expensive. For Chum, there has not been a lot of product, and we do not expect to see much more either. For pinks, even though the salmon season saw an abundance of pinks, there does not seem to be much pink offers available from Alaska right now.
On the trade front, Russia has not purchased a single pound of U.S. seafood since 2014 due to a trade embargo, yet Russian seafood imports to the U.S. have increased by 173%. And the continuing trade war with China has pushed up tariffs to 37% to 42% on seafood going to that country. Seafood is Alaska's top export by far, and the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute reports the value going to China has dropped by about $500 million in the last 4 years. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
KMXT is awaiting a new announcement from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game here in Kodiak. To hear the most recent announcement regarding openings and closures around Kodiak, call 486-4559.
Welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 28th day of September, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 8:08. It will set again at 7:50. That's going to give us 11 hours and 42 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 56 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 30, set in 1996, and our record high was 64, set in 2015. Currently 50 degrees. Fairly pleasant outside, just a 30% chance of rain this afternoon, mainly before 4 p.m. Mostly cloudy skies with a high of 51 today. Those north winds could gust as high as 20. For tonight, slight chance of rain before 7, then isolated showers between 7 and 10. Mostly cloudy skies tonight with a low of 38, northwest winds to 10. And for tomorrow, Sunny skies, high of 52, northwest to 15, gusting to 25. We have a low tide coming up here on the east side at 12:36, just in a few minutes now. That will be a 4-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 7 p.m., 6:59, a 7.4-foot tide, so only about 3.5 feet of difference there. Our next low tide here on the east side will be at 2:17 a.m. and be a 2-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 9:31 tomorrow morning of 5.3 feet. Over on the west side, you will have a low tide at 12:58 p.m., just about 1 o'clock, of 6 feet. You will have a high tide at 6:26 p.m. in Larsen Bay of 11.1 feet, followed by a low tide at 2:38 a.m. of 3.1 feet, and your high tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 9:17 a.m. and be 8.7 feet. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for inside waters, Chiniac and Marmot Bays. For Chiniac Bay, north 20 right now, seas to 4 feet. For tomorrow, northwest 15, seas coming down to 3 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, north 15 right now, seas to 3 feet. For tomorrow, northwest 15, seas to 3 feet. For Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore, small craft advisory through Wednesday. Northeast 30 right now, seas to 10 feet. For tonight, north 25, seas to 9 feet. For tomorrow, northwest 30, seas coming up to 11 feet. Over in the Shelikof, on Kodiak's west side, northeast 20 right now and seas to 6 feet. For tonight, northwest 20, seas to 5 feet. And for tomorrow, northwest 20, seas to 5 feet. For Wednesday night in the Shelikof, look for southwest winds to 20 knots and seas to 6 feet. And for Thursday in the Shelikof, southwest 35, seas to 11 feet. We recently received an update from the Kodiak Emergency Operations Center. Today, 47 new cases were reported for the Kodiak Island Borough. They were all classified as community spread. Right now, 227 cases are currently classified as active locally. There are 3 people currently hospitalized in Kodiak with active cases of COVID. 83 local hospitalizations total. 2,127 total cases associated with COVID-19 for the Kodiak Island Borough. The Kodiak City Council and Borough Assembly will be holding a joint work session tomorrow. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. Public participation for the meeting is in person and virtual. Elected officials may be participating via audio, video conferencing. Public members are encouraged to tune in right here on KMXT 100.1 FM. The meeting will also be web streamed, and the web streaming link and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. For those who wish to request printed meeting materials or have questions regarding the meeting, contact the city clerk at 486-8636 or the borough clerk at 486-9310. Books unite us, censorship divides us. It's Banned Books Week. Celebrate your freedom to read. Check out a challenged book and exercise your freedoms at the Kodiak Public Library. Also, it's time to hunker down and read. Kodiak Public Library has launched Kodiak Reads, a community book club, with its fall selection, Find the Good, by Heather Lendy, Alaska's writer laureate. Copies are available at the front desk of the library, and Zoom meetings with the author will be held in October. So stop in and pick up your copy of Find the Good. Also, they have live homework help. Get online tutoring for subjects like math, English, and history, or help finding and applying for a job online. Work with a live tutor or study independently, free to all Alaskans. Find the homework help link on the online resources page of the Kodiak Public Library's website. And remember, curbside service and home delivery are still available. Place holds on materials from your device or call the library and pick up items curbside anytime between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. And the library is open 10 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Friday and Saturday. Masks are required for entry into the library until further notice, And that phone number for the library is 486-8686. The Kodiak Aleutians Regional Subsistence Advisory Council will have its fall meeting via teleconference on Tuesday. Actually, that's going on right now. If you'd like to look in on that, the teleconference number is 1-877-807-6977 with the passcode 7380-3960. Also, agendas and materials are on the Fish and Wildlife Service Office of Subsistence Management website. The City of Kodiak has replaced absentee voting in person with early voting by ordinance. Early voting is similar to when you go to vote at your polling precinct on election day. At the time you vote, your eligibility is verified and you're given a ballot to feed into a voting machine. Early voting ballots are counted and included in the unofficial tally on election night. So we encourage everyone to take advantage of the option to vote early. All you have to do is go to the assembly chambers right up here on High School Hill between 10 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. all the way up until October 4th. If you have any questions, call the city clerk at 486-8636.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.